This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is Health and Living on The Bigger Picture. You are listening to an edited recording of this year's BFM Health and Living Junior event by AIA Vitality.
The biggest ongoing battle in medicine today is over the issue of vaccination. The debate pits parents against doctors with terrifying consequences. Vaccine-preventable diseases like measles and diphtheria have spiked and are killing more children. The World Health Organization ranked vaccine hesitancy as one of the top 10 threats to global health in 2019. What is fueling parents' anxieties about vaccination? And is the medical community able to counter the anti-vaccination movement with scientific arguments alone? Moderating the battle over vaccination is Sumitra Selvaraj, presenter-producer of The Bigger Picture. And the speakers invited up to the stage are Dato Dr. Musa Mohammed Nordin, consultant pediatrician and neonatologist at KBJ Damansara Specialist Hospital. Dr. Karim Betaj, social psychologist, Jeffrey Chia School of Medicine and Health Sciences, Monash University, Malaysia. And Chan Li Jin, health activist.
What we're going to do is first start off with a question to the floor. What I would like very simply to know is, do you trust vaccines? Your options are yes or no. 94%, almost 95% of you and climbing say that you trust vaccines, which is great. But what I would really like to know from our well-respected and acclaimed medical expert here, Dr. Musa, is why should we trust vaccines?
Vaccine hesitancy is as old as the smallpox vaccine. That goes back to 1796. Now, there were basically four contentions. One, they said that smallpox was not serious. That's insane. Because smallpox killed 300 million people in the 20th century. Number two, the vaccine is not effective. Again, why you should trust vaccines? The science shows that with the smallpox vaccine, smallpox has been eradicated from Mother Earth since 1980. Number three, the vaccine hesitant parents or who refuse vaccines say that vaccine causes, this is in the 18th century, yeah, causes syphilis. And what different are the anti-vaxxers today who says that vaccine causes autism, diabetes, sudden infant death syndrome, and multiple sclerosis. And the science has shown that this is nonsense. Okay. And finally, number four, they said in the 18th century that vaccine is again God's will, providence. What different is it from the anti-vaccine Muslim who says that ia bertentangan dengan kehendak Tuhan? Whilst all our religious scholars say that, whether it is Muslims, Hindus, Buddhists, Christians, Jews, they are all pro-vaccines.
You're right, Dr. Musa, of course, that the science is solid. The science is irrefutable. Why then has the World Health Organization decreed that vaccine hesitancy is and will be one of the greatest threats to world health, to public health?
Because of this hesitancy and refusal, all the successes that we have achieved with regards to preventing diseases which kills and which maims, which disable children is now beginning to re-emerge, reappear. As a medical student in the United Kingdom in the 70s, I never saw a case of measles as a medical student. Now, the students in UK have a gala time diagnosing measles. Why? Because during my time, The coverage for MMR, measles, mumps, rubella, was 95%. Mm-hmm. Now in the UK, one time it dropped to 70%. In Malaysia, let's not go too far. In 2013, there were 195 cases of measles. No death. Just last year, 2018, we had 10 times the case of measles and 6 deaths. These are preventable deaths. Pertussis, whooping cough. The Malays call it batuk seratus hari. 100-day cough. It is really heartbreaking to see these kids in your practice. You know, they virtually cough every day for the next 100 days. Last year, we had 1,000 cases of whooping cough. 22 children died, unnecessary death. And all of them were under 3 months of age. This is a human tragedy. And globally, WHO has seen a 30% rise in measles. And that's why it is a threat to our global health.
Okay. So, Dr. Musa, you've given us a great overarching perspective of what it looks like from an expert's point of view. Legion, as a health activist who works on the ground, you come face-to-face with parents on a weekly basis, regularly, who tell you why they are afraid of vaccines. Would you mind sharing some real-life kind of encounters and perhaps share with me what sort of language they use when it comes to describing their fears?
I think it has to do with overwhelming knowledge. So I think people are having too much of information. It's an information overload. Things, parenting now is not like parenting before. I remember 25 years ago, there was no internet. There was no Facebook. There weren't the kind of information that is available at your fingertips. And now, as this information became easily available, people are being overwhelmed by too much information. So when that happens, it's not just about vaccines, but on all aspects of life, all aspects of parenting as well. So let's just talk about not just vaccination. Let's talk about breastfeeding. In the past, if you want to breastfeed, good and well for you. But now, if you breastfeed, it's good. But if you don't breastfeed, you get attacked as well. So I think vaccinations, as well as medications even, it's coming to a tipping point where people are being overwhelmed and they are at the point where they are deciding, they feel that they need to decide whether they need to take one stand or the other.
Okay. And this whole idea of being on the fence, right? This whole idea of hesitancy is something right up your street, Karim. The psychology of hesitancy in the face of overwhelming facts, like Dr. Musa has presented, in the face of solid scientific evidence, why would a person, why would a parent still hesitate?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I actually agree with what you were just saying, that there is this kind of information overload. So what you usually see is that when people become very insecure, when things are not controllable in their environment. Mm-hmm. Let's say our environment is changing, we're globalizing, we have the internet, maybe economic hardships. What you see usually is there is a growth of distrust. Mm-hmm. Okay, people start to distrust the government, they start to distrust official narratives. Now, this is not something new. This is something you actually already had in the 17th, 18th century conspiracy theorists. Usually it would be some old guy on a square somewhere in London shouting stuff and three people would be listening to him. The thing is now is that we have the internet. We can actually share our opinion with people in like-minded groups, in echo chambers or filter bubbles. We start to increase or actually strengthen our opinion. In psychology, we call that group polarization. Mm-hmm. And before you know, we have these extreme groups who believe in these kind of sometimes outrageous conspiracies, yes, whether it's climate hoax, vaccination, immigration attacks, you name it. Mm-hmm. So it's a very, very weird kind of combination between our social environment, internet, distrust, and the way we as human beings actually think.
Okay, so if we're talking about a rise in mistrust, a rise in an inability of people to believe in the facts, Perhaps what we should do right now, Dr. Musa, with your help, is just lay out some of the facts. One of the most popular questions that we've had come in from Pigeonhole is this. Do vaccines contain harmful chemicals? For example, in this case, they've asked whether it contains mercury or aluminum.
Mercury, thimer salt. You know, they don't ask like that. They say it contains poisons. Come on, man. I am giving a medicine to a child, to a healthy child. Give me some credit, lah. Right. Just to give you the science, yeah? There's no thimerosal, by the way, mercury in vaccines, yeah?
Okay.
And anyway, thimerosal or mercury is in the environment, yeah? You breastfeed your child for next 6 months, and I give you your first 6 months of vaccine, you probably get 2 times more mercury in breastfeeding than from my vaccines. Fact. Aluminium. Mm. When they could not win with mercury, they went to aluminium. Aluminium, by the way, is the third most abundant metal in the world. We all breathe in aluminium from our sofa, from exhaust pipes, you know. Now, for the first 6 months, I give you your 6 months of vaccines to your child. You take breast milk, you take 2 times more aluminium than my vaccine. You take formula milk, will be 40 times the amount of aluminium ingested in your cow's milk. And if you take soya milk, it will be 120 times the amount of aluminium. Now, I'm trying to be factual. That is the science. We can't be putting poisons in vaccines, right? Researchers have done at least 10 years of research before it is laid out into the community, before we inject the child, the adolescent, and the adult. 10 years of research. And as Lee Jin alluded to, the savvy, professional mothers, parents, goes on to Google, and within half an hour, they are immunologists, vaccinologists, pediatricians, and some of the Muslims become muftis. And they debunk all the fatwas of our scholars.
Karim, what is it about going onto social media or going into or wading into the murky world of cyberspace that makes people feel that they are in control, that they have the power to make decisions? Forget what the medical experts say, but I have the information in front of me and therefore I know what to do best. What is it about social media that causes that?
Well, the thing about social media is that it actually confirms our beliefs. So if you say, okay, you know what, the whole climate change is a hoax, okay, and you go onto social media and you sit with like-minded individuals on a Facebook group, Twitter, you name it, and we have this weird kind of tendency as human beings, is that the moment we have made up our mind, mm-hmm, we actually are very hard to be convinced of the opposite. So that we call that a confirmation bias or a belief bias, mm-hmm, is that we always search for information that confirms our beliefs. And if we are in this filter bubble, you continuously have people who confirm your beliefs. Yes. So you're actually, you see, I'm right. And everybody who tries to discredit me...
And just, everybody loves to be right.
Exactly, and that is nonsense. But the interesting thing is here, with conspiracy theories, it becomes extra difficult because they are self-reinforcing. Because conspiracy theories usually have a malignant kind of government kind of idea behind it. And the moment, so especially official narratives, it often has a kind of a malignant kind of intention. So the moment people actually come with counter evidence, like the doctor just said, the thing is that people will usually say, yeah, but wait a minute, these guys are part of the whole conspiracy, so I don't trust him. So that is the problem. Conspiracies are actually self-reinforcing, mm-hmm, plus our psychological tendency to be among people that are agreeing with us and to discredit everything that is not agreeing with our points. And then you have a very, very powerful concoction of disbelief.
We'll be back after a break for more from the panel discussion at this year's BFM Health and Living Junior event by AIA Vitality. Don't go anywhere, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Health and Living on the Bigger Picture, and you are listening to an edited recording of this year's BFM Health and Living Junior event by AIA Vitality.
Legion, when you go and speak to parents, as a health activist, when you speak to parents face-to-face and try and communicate the facts to them, do they try and convince you otherwise?
No, they're telling me I'm part of the conspiracy. You know, nowadays, parents are so informed, they are so woke. They want to be trendy. They want to be seen to be the in crowd. You know, I'm an informed parent. And I'm not the kind of parent that would just follow whatever has been done before without even knowing whether it's right or wrong. So you read everything on the internet and you want to be trendy. You want to be seen in the in crowd of parenting. So if there are parents who seem to be going against poisons, I'm going to go all organic. I want to have the best life for my children. I'm even going to go on soaps that are handmade soaps. Soaps made of breast milk even. Or soaps that are made by the backyards of people instead of commercial soaps. There are parents now who are going the extreme section of life. So they want to have just organic stuff and their anti-medications. And these are the kind of parents that would think that everything is a conspiracy. And everything that is poisonous would be bad for their child. So they don't realize that in the environment there is a lot of poison already. But there's something else that I'd like to talk about, you know, when the facts are presented, stating that, you know, the number of measles have increased.
Yes.
It's not just the child that we're talking about. I have got adult friends who have suffered from measles, not because of their own fault. Okay, so I've had a blind friend, she was blind, she was born blind because her mother caught measles during pregnancy. And I have a relative who's born deaf and mute, you see. And she became like that because her mother had rubella during pregnancy. So it's not just about the death. It's about the entire spectrum. We're talking about public health. We're talking about the community at large. So yes, maybe they survive. You have measles, you survive. But let's say you have a best friend. I go to work. I'm not. I catch measles. I will survive, all right? Because I'm not vaccinated. I get measles. But I have a colleague at work, and you are pregnant, and we have interaction.
Yes.
You catch measles. If you catch measles during pregnancy, it's going to affect your baby, and your baby will have much higher chances of being born with all these other kind of problems. So it's a much bigger problem that we do not, realize.
And we can center the conversation around these diseases all we want, and yet the first question that you will get asked, which I'm quite surprised hasn't come up here yet, is, and I'm going to put Dr. Musa on the spot here perhaps, do vaccines cause death, Dr. Musa?
Disease cause death?
In 1988, there were 350,000 cases of polio. One of my pediatrician colleagues was a polio victim. One in every 200 becomes paralyzed for life. And out of these who are paralyzed, 10% will die. If you remember in the 1950s, they used to put them in iron lungs, this chamber to help them to breathe. Some of them stayed for 60 years in these iron lungs. And many of them died. Yeah? And when the vaccine came in the 50s, children used to line up miles to get the vaccine. Except for a few white-haired individuals here, I think none of you have seen a case of polio. What big hassle about polio? This is what George Santayana, a philosopher, said. Those who do not remember the past are condemned to repeat it. True enough. We have become victims of our successes. That was 1988, 350,000. Last year, The last count was 33 cases of polio in the whole world. Mm. Polio kills. Vaccine saves life. Now, does vaccine cause death? The simple answer is no, right? But yes, there have been some problems because we are purifying our vaccines.
Okay.
And yes, I tell you the problem, right? And this is a resurgence to the anti-vaccine lobby. In 1982, there was a documentary, DPT Vaccine Roulette. Diphtheria, pertussis, tetanus. A documentary. You saw these children who had the DPT vaccine, the triple antigen, and then a few weeks later, they became mentally retarded, seizing, convulsing, cerebral palsy, and they blamed it on the vaccine. The parents got together and formed DPT, Dissatisfied Parents Together. And they sued the companies. Right? They sued the companies. And the American government had to intervene. Because the companies just cabut lari. We don't want to make these vaccines anymore in the United States of America. The American government intervened, arbitrated, protected the companies. Right? And then the science showed that all the children who were convulsing, who had cerebral palsy, who were mentally retarded, actually had an abnormality of the brain from birth. This is what they call a mutation in the gene, the sodium channel gene. They were abnormal children, unfortunately. It had nothing to do with the vaccine. But this was the birth of DPT, who now call themselves National Vaccine Information Center. Yeah. The biggest fear-mongering and disinformation, misinformation on vaccine in the whole world. Based in the United States of America, and they've got friends in Malaysia.
Dr. Musa, you've been extremely clear and to the point to my question of, do vaccines cause death? Do they cause adverse effects?
The answer is yes.
Okay.
It's called AEFI. In medical school, we got lots of mnemonics, lah. Adverse effects following immunization. And the bulk of them are minor kesan sampingan.
Side effects.
Side effects. Yeah. You get a shot. I get my flu shots every year. Oh, by the way, there are a lot of senior citizens here. Make sure you get your flu shots every year. Hey, I have an outbreak in my hospital. Schools, you know, problem. Parents will tell you, right? But senior citizens, make sure you get your flu shots. Your pneumococcal conjugate vaccine, one shot only. Yeah, and some of you, your shingles vaccine, yeah? Not just for children, okay? Side effects. Very few. Pain, sakit, a bit of malaise, a bit of gram, but generally okay. Very rare, you get an anaphylactic reaction, i.e., they become hypotensive, they have difficulty breathing.
Rare, but it happens.
Sorry?
Rare, but it happens.
Yes. I'm going to give you a number. And they need to be resuscitated. One in a million.
Okay.
Even medicines, you have that problem. Mm. You can't tell. This is what we call an idiosyncratic reaction. You just cannot predict. We are not a perfect science. It's not a perfect world.
And yet, Karim, I think you can perhaps help us understand why that one
and
in
somehow
a million
that one in a million
matters
the most, and all these people that get saved don't matter.
Yes.
That's a very interesting question, and somehow that seems to be quite a typical phenomenon, and it has to do with the fact that this one situation where the vaccine had a negative effect, mm-hmm, is something that triggers our emotion to such an extent. I mean, if you watch the news, usually the news that gets read the most is the news that triggers our anger or our fear. Mm-hmm. If you have one situation that is fearful, again, what happens? We are in the age of the internet. That's why we have conspiracy theories blowing up. Is that you have this negative situation, that is the one that gets shared, that's the one that goes viral, that's the one that gets the most likes.
Why? And that, why?
And that is the typical human tendency to focus on things that trigger our emotion, okay? That is something that is, I guess, almost evolutionary. We are biologically predisposed to check information in our environment that is threatening. Mm-hmm. If it's threatening, we home in onto that information and we blow it up because it has been very successful for our survival. We avoided things that were negative. But we didn't evolve over millions of years to deal with something like the internet. So when it gets shared over and over, negative news, we start to see it as something that we would call very representative. In psychology, we call it the availability heuristic. Something that is available all the time becomes something that is apparently to us very prevalent. It's the same as, for example, if you would have news about immigrants, you have like maybe 1% of the immigrants that would engage in criminal behavior. You keep repeating that, and suddenly people think that it's happening all around them with all immigrants. That is this typical tendency of us to blow things up that are threatening. And because it has been in some way, shape, or form adapted to our survival.
You may have heard recently a baby in the States had vaccine and died within 36 hours. Ooh, the anti-vaccine lobby went wild and this mother became a poster girl. Right? You know what happened actually? The coroner said she had some whiskey before she went to sleep and she bunked it, slept in with her child. That child suffered from sudden infant death syndrome, and probably the mother
blame
on the vaccine. And people in the media played up the issue. Number two, when that girl in England, she had the human papilloma virus vaccine to prevent against cervical cancer, to prevent against six cancers, by the way, head and neck cancer, anal genital cancer, and cervical cancer. Mm. Six cancers, man. Have you all had your... Right? Okay. When that girl died, headlines, HPV kills. Hello. That child had a cancer of the heart. You see, the HPV vaccine, you know, has been really kena taruh nicely, you know. Yes. But believe me, it is the most studied vaccine in the world. It's been studied in 1 million people, 1 million girls, women, and has been proven to be safe, to be effective, prevent six different types of cancers, and it does not cause chronic fatigue syndrome, it does not cause chronic pain syndrome, it does not cause autoimmune diseases. It has all been debunked by science.
Legion, how do you talk about this to the parents that you meet? How do you ask them to read beyond the headlines?
I think one of the most common comment that these anti-vaxxers would say that anak ai tak vaksin pun okay je, sehat aja. That's the most common thing they will say. I've got 4 kids totally unvaccinated and now they're well and healthy. So that is the kind of question that is a very typical, you see. And it's exactly what Dr. Moso was saying. They are banking on the victories of the past. In the past, our immunization levels were very high. Mm. And what we are all enjoying right now is what's called a herd mentality. We are protected.
Herd immunity, yes.
So even if there are pockets of people who do not vaccinate, they feel that, oh, I'm fine because, you know, my children are not getting this disease anyway. This disease has gone poo-poos. It's no longer here, you know. And I think that's also one of the very big misconceptions as well. People think that these diseases have gone. And have disappeared totally. So the fact that polio is coming back, measles is on the rise, this tells us that this herd mentality is starting to break down. And if you're not going to defend that, it's going to come down lower to a level where you will begin to see a lot of these diseases that have totally disappeared slowly begin to come back. So these are things that we try to tell people, that they cannot depend on, you know, just hearsay, and we don't want them to belong in a trendy crowd to think that they are protected. My child is fine. We have very healthy food. We eat only organic food. No, but let me just add something about vaccinations in general. You know, the funny thing is, I can't even believe you're sitting here talking about people who are anti-vaccines.
Why?
Seriously, we have come to a level where we are so privileged and we believe that, you know, oh, no, my son is fine, you know, my baby will not get this disease. We are so comforted and we are so privileged that we don't even think a disease is going to strike us. But, you know, I work in an organization where we deal a lot with refugees. So we conduct outreach clinics to refugee centers. So there have been a few Rohingya refugee camps in which we tried to provide health clinics. And the first thing they would ask for would be vaccinations. And we're like, no, we can't afford vaccinations for this particular camp because vaccinations are expensive and we can't just give vaccinations ad hoc. Mm. You would know by now, I'm sure, that vaccinations are not something that I just think of you, I chuchu only, you know. Mm. You must have a proper structure to it. Like, you know, in your children's clinic, they give you a proper book as well. And before you go for your vaccinations, they would ask you questions. Is your baby allergic to anything? Do you have a history of fits, history of whatever? Mm. You have to go through that proper assessment before they actually give you a jab. So whenever I go to I go to refugee center, these refugees are demanding for it. They want the vaccinations because they have seen their children dying like flies. So here we are saying, no, I don't want.
We'll be back after a break for more from the panel discussion at this year's BFM Health and Living Junior event by AIA Vitality. Don't go anywhere, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Health and Living on the Bigger Picture, and you are listening to an edited recording of this year's BFM Health and Living Junior event by AIA Vitality.
So all this while, we've been talking about hesitancy and the problem. Karim, let's talk solutions. How do we build trust when it comes to such a divisive issue?
To be very honest, I've been searching the psychological literature. How can we solve the problem of conspiracy theories? And to be very honest, scientists, we don't have an answer just yet. One of the most important things, I think, is that there needs to be a general sense of trust in the public narrative, in the official narrative, so the government, so educational institutions, researchers, the media. Mm-hmm. So I think there is a task for all these institutions to make sure that the people feel some sense of trust. What else?
Well, one very important point. In Hinduism, there is actually a goddess of smallpox. It is believed that Mariam cures plagues and poxes, and therefore there is a very strong cultural belief when it comes to these sort of diseases. It's not very different from a problem that we deal with here as well, Dr. Musa, that you're all well too familiar with.
Okay. I don't know, but I actually wrote the chapter on immunization from the perspective of the various religions. Yeah, we edited this book together with Dr. Aisha. Mm. Immunization controversies. What you really should know is now already in 4 languages. I gave a copy to Bill Gates as well.
Ooh, quick name drop there. I love it.
Oh, because he's.
He's big
in vaccines, yes. You know. But remember, as a public health intervention, number one is clean and safe water. Agree?
Yes.
Yeah, as we're speaking now, I was supposed to be in Tapah because His Highness, the Sultan of Perak, is there to inaugurate and honor my young doctors from Islamic Medical Association response and relief team. We built 10 water treatment plants for the Orang Asli indigenous communities and one dam. Yeah, and we've been doing that all over Malaysia to the refugees in Cox Bazar, mm-hmm. in Bangladesh, in Palu, right? Clean water. And the next is vaccines.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Agreed.
So, when we wrote this in the book, up until 2011, half of the world's polio was in India.
That's right.
80% of India are Hindus. Yet, by 2000, 1.7, India had eradicated polio. 1.5 billion. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how they dealt with the religiosity, mm-hmm. but that just showed that, you know.
But what lesson could we learn from that? How do we apply that to our own vaccine fence sitters?
Well, if I can jump in for a moment, I think the doctor is a very good example for how you do that. So I think everybody knows the saying, facts don't care about feelings, but it's also that feelings don't care about facts. So we can go on and on and on and present the facts as scientists, but why do all these negative cases get shared? Because they touch people's feelings.
Yes.
So if you actually counteract, of course using facts, but also using some emotion, feelings, convincing, like the doctor here himself. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure that you then can counter this kind of negative movement.
No. Doctors are lousy communicators. You need people like Li Jin and yourself to communicate. We are so obsessed with our facts and our meta-analysis, randomized controlled trials.
I agree.
That
I totally
the key
agree.
Messages don't get across.
I make the same mistake.
We are failures.
I agree with him, you know. I agree. You know why? Because there are more and more doctors, even pediatricians and GPs, who themselves now have become, I wouldn't say they're anti-vaxxers, but they condone it. They condone it. And that is the biggest threat. When you go to a doctor and you tell the doctor, I don't want to vaccinate. And the doctor says, okay, it's your choice. I respect your decision. And the doctor says, actually, I also don't believe in vaccines, lah. If a doctor says that to patients, you will find that there will be more parents who say that, ala, doctor also say no need to vaccinate, also okay. So this is a very big danger, you know, why? Because doctors also cari makan lah, correct? They want to make sure that the parent keep coming to them. I almost have come to think that it's like a conspiracy theory, you know. You know, you think that doctors are people who want to heal, but sometimes, or rather, I've come to a point where I suspect if a doctor tells you, it's okay, you don't have to vaccinate. Why? It's going to be continuous business for him, you know. Your child is going to get measles. You come in, hey, I think my anak sakit lah. He's going to get your business for measles, for rotavirus,
and
for
mumps.
It's more business for the doctor. I would suspect it's not right when he tells you it's okay if you don't want to vaccinate.
I think you have a good point there. So there's always the question also, what kind of interests are there behind certain kind of conspiracy theories? You can ask yourself the same question with those people who say that climate change is a hoax. Mm. What kind of interests are behind those who try to spread this kind of conspiracy theories? Mm. And I do think there is something to be said for what you just said, that there is a group of people who have high interest in those who don't take any vaccination because it will make them money, you know?
Right.
Yeah, good point.
Dr. Musa, final impassioned words on the battle. This is not the battle over vaccinations, I've decided. This is the battle for vaccinations. And what are your thoughts on it to wrap up our panel?
One, vaccines are safe. Two, vaccines are effective. We put in at least 15 years of research to make sure that your children's health is protected. And the data at this point in time, we are saving 2.5 million lives each year through our vaccination strategy. And we are preventing 750,000 disabilities each year with vaccination. And there is an opportunity to save another 2.5 million lives each year, if we use our vaccines properly, yeah, what's in the National Immunization Program, and if we use the new vaccine, including pneumococcal conjugate vaccine and the rotavirus vaccine.
Excellent.
So tell me any other program that can surpass these promises of vaccines.
Irrefutable. Dr. Musa, thank you so much. Kareem, Li Jin, thank you very much. Thank you all so much for your attention. Have a great afternoon ahead.
You've been listening to an edited recording of this year's BFM Health and Living Junior event by AIA Vitality. This event was presented by AIA Vitality, enabling healthier, longer, better lives. This has been Health and Living on the Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.